Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks to everyone who supports the Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, July 30th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Lamar Wilson.
Well, look at that. He's a man of the world, ladies and gentlemen, Lamar Wilson. Also a man of the world is Roger Chang.
Hello, I am also a man of this world.
Why did I say where I was from? Because the line just says I'm Lamar Wilson, so I just followed it.
Well,
you do what you're told.
Sure. Exactly. I thought you would want to embellish it, like saying, like, you're from, reporting from
I'm in Los Angeles as well. There you go.
Well, we got some good stuff to talk about. We're going to fix the internet on today's show. About time somebody did, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
All right. Let's start with a few tech things you should know, though.
YouTube announced support for vertical videos on the desktop, something that the mobile version of YouTube already has supported. So it plays a vertical video in its natural aspect ratio without putting it in landscape in that box with the black bars along the sides. So some users have complained the video actually kind of loses quality or gets cut off by the new feature.
A joint venture of SoftBank and Yahoo Japan called PayPay is partnering with India's Paytm to launch a payment system in Japan by November. Now, the QR code-based platform will be called PayPay and integrated with Yahoo Japan's smartphone apps.
The new DJI Mavic 2 quadcopters are shown in the latest Argos catalog in the UK, though DJI itself has not officially announced them. The catalog advertisement shows zoom and pro variations of the foldable unmanned aerial vehicle. Both editions have 360-degree collision detection, advanced pilot assistance systems, and ActiveTrack 2.0 with battery life of 31 minutes, according to the ad. The pro lists a 1-inch CMOS Hasselblad camera, and the cheaper zoom shows a 2x zoom lens. All right.
I have the first one. It's still in a box. I'm terrible.
Yeah, it's really hard to fly it that way.
I need to work on that.
Not a drone expert, but yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit more about a milestone on the road to blockchain.
Yeah. So the Commonwealth Bank of Australia announced that it has successfully tracked a batch of 17,000 kilograms of almonds from Australia to Germany using a private blockchain built on an Ethereum network. The bank's partners could check in on the platform. Oh, excuse me. Let me read that again. The bank's partners could check in on the location, temperature, humidity, and other metrics of the shipment whenever they want it in real time. So this is kind of nuts. Sorry, I that's all I had.
Oh, because almonds.
I'm a little ignorant on this, so I don't want to sit here and act like I know what I'm talking about when I don't. I don't really understand the blockchain thing. I think it's interesting. My first thought in reading this was like, oh, couldn't they just have tracked this any normal way? Why is it special they're using
the idea is having all of this verified simply, right? Like, yes, you can absolutely like log all this and input it, et cetera. But using the ledger system means that you've got some verification that this is actually happening.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
And only happening with the shipment that you're talking about, it's harder to fake. So using the blockchain to track supply chain shipments is one of the big holy grails of blockchain development because of that. Because, yeah, you know, you can't have somebody slip somebody a 20 to fudge the paperwork when you've got this community validated blockchain going on. And then stuff like checking in on temperature and whatnot is just an added feature that you can add to the data as it moves from place to place.
Yeah, I mean, going from Australia to Germany, yes, this is the shipment of almonds, but it could be a lot of different things. That's a long distance. You know, normally it would be, where is this package? Hopefully you can track it. But having all these other metrics, temperature and humidity and all sorts of stuff that contributes to fresh food, as we were talking about in our free show today. That's really cool.
Yeah. And an example of the blockchain that doesn't involve cryptocurrency, even though it's on the Ethereum platform, it's another use of it. Spanish taxi drivers. Tell us about those, Sarah.
Well, Spanish taxi drivers in Spain have been holding protests across the country against ride-hailing services like Uber. Kind of came to a head today, Monday. Cabs blocked access to major streets, including the Gran Vía in Barcelona and Madrid's Catalana? Did they do the Y or the L?
Catalana, maybe.
As well as airports and train stations. It was a big protest. If you've seen any of the photos, pretty major. The union is meeting with the government to attempt to resolve issues. A Spanish law limits ride-hailing licenses to one for every 30 taxi licenses. But cab drivers say this law is not being respected. There are way too many ride-hailing services on the road, say the cab drivers. So, you know, union issue. I guess my first, and I don't know if everybody saw the photos, but my first reaction was, imagine if this happened in L.A. Just imagine.
Well, yeah, and we've seen these protests in Paris. We've seen them in London. We've actually seen some in the United States in places. That I think Vegas had a similar situation, not as extensive, right? But they've had it multiple times in Spain now. It feels like this is the kind of thing that's becoming rarer. In London, for instance, the cabbies were fairly settled. They'd mollified them until they reissued the license to Uber. Now they're starting to get upset again. So we might see something happen there. But it does show that not all is well on the front of ride hailing versus traditional cab service.
Yeah. So I have a kind of a strong opinion on this, I guess, or maybe it's controversial. When I saw this happening in different cities here, and especially like in New York, is a really good example. That's taxi heaven. The push of Uber was a threat on their business and their comfort of, you know, rudeness to cut. They took customers for granted, right? This company comes in and, you know, then they protest because now they're shaking up the industry. So I am against protesting for that reason, because your job is being threatened if you weren't doing a good job. However, what has come of that is that now the cabs there have their own app. They, you know, they're trying to compete with Uber. They tend to have been more friendly. They now all have credit card readers that work instead of you getting in there and they're demanding cash for you. So, like, there's been a positive outcome. And I wonder, do people think this is a good thing? I understand the loss, you know, of jobs, or if Uber's not following the law, if it's not supposed, you know, if it's doing more drivers than the 30, one in every 30. I get that part. But I wonder, is this a good shakeup of an industry that needed to treat customers better in the first place?
Well, and it depends on the area. In London, cab service was very good. Not that there weren't improvements that can and have been made. I've taken a cab in Spain from the airport to Barcelona and back to the Gran Via, basically, and back. And it was fine. But I don't have enough experience with it to know if that's one that needed it. I'll tell you what, San Francisco absolutely needed it because there were too few medallions. You could not get a cab in certain parts of the city. And there was no movement to loosen it up until Uber and Lyft came along. So, yeah, it just kind of depends on the region. Tech in Asia has a profile of a coffee shop in Shanghai called Ratio, where customers scan a barcode at the entrance. You don't talk to a person. You place your order on a kiosk, pay by mobile, and ordering allows the customers to customize the ratios of coffee, water, milk, etc. Hence the name of the company, of the cafe, Ratio. Then what makes it really interesting is a robotic arm makes the coffee. So you don't talk to someone to order, and a person isn't making your coffee. The robot's making the coffee, does all the grinding, all the mixing of the heating of the milk, whatever needs to be done, places it on a counter where a human waiter picks it up and delivers it to the customer, the part you think wouldn't even be needed. The robot also makes cocktails, if you're into that. The chain was founded by Gavin Pathros, who led the digital transformation of Yum China. They're the folks who do KFC, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and others. There's also a food court at Alibaba's Hema supermarket, which uses robots as waiters and chefs for many dishes. I thought it was interesting that this is an example of a cafe where they're like, yeah, we can replace everything with humans, so we'll still employ humans because that raises our level of service above other cafes, because then you can talk to them at leisure. They can do better service to bring you your coffee. You don't have to fight people for it at the counter, etc.
Yeah, it's like it's that last mile, right? And yeah. You know, the whole service, you know, is automated, which I guess it can be, but yeah, that last human touch that we desperately want to hold on to. I think that's why they do that.
Well, I think a lot of folks are like, ratio of coffee, water, milk, I don't know, myself included. But I do know that I like to do it myself. So if I could figure out how the robot could get it precisely the same way every time, rather than what a barista might think is best for me, because I'm the only one who knows that, and to be able to, I mean, quite frankly, probably churn through more folks because the humans can do all the other stuff at the same time. It's really cool. I'd like to have one of these coffees to see how I actually feel about it. But yeah, I mean, if you like regular old, you know, not fancy coffee, one of these robots seems a little, over the top. But as people tend to, I don't know, respect the art of coffee more, or certainly coffee snobs, there's more and more of those kinds of places cropping up. It seems like it would be good for the assembly line overall.
Yeah, somebody who's picky knows and wants it done exactly a certain way can get it that way. And also skip the lines. I mean, Starbucks already does this in the U.S. Starbucks is the 51% of the market share in China. That's what Ratio is going after. They want to take a piece of that away. But that kind of automation, in fact, Starbucks struck a deal today, I think it was with Alibaba, to provide delivery services, because delivery of coffee is a big deal in China right now as well. But anything that makes you not have to stand in line for 5 minutes or more to just order your coffee, you can do it on the app, and then not have to stand in line for 5 minutes or more to wait for the coffee to be done. I'm all for that.
Me too. EA's Origin Access Premier is now live. The new PC game subscription service announced in an investor call last week will cost $14.99 a month or $99.99 a year. Subscribers will get access to EA's first run titles 5 days before the release date, as well as an extra content, in-game currency, plus all the benefits of the basic Origin Access membership, which includes EA's 100 plus game library and 10% off Origin digital purchases. Upcoming games that will debut on the premiere include Madden NFL 19 Hall of Fame Edition, FIFA 19 Ultimate Edition, Battlefield 5 Deluxe Edition, and Anthem Legion of Dawn Edition. So this was, I believe, announced or teased at E3. So now, you know, we have more information that this is out. They have a similar service on, well, not similar to this, but a service called EA Access that is on console, specifically the Xbox, where you get access to games early, but only as a trial. And so you get a weekend trial to see if you like it. And if you want to buy it, you get 10% off. And so this is a new thing, PC only. And I definitely see this subscription service is, I wouldn't say trying to go after the Xbox Game Pass, but Xbox has a service on console very similar to this. All of their first run titles that Xbox develops, and a lot of older games. You get about 100 of them for $99 a year or $9.99 a month. So that this is a interesting market that we're in now of subscribing to games versus owning them. I'm of the camp of, yeah, I think subscription is great. I mean, think about $15 a month and you get access to 100 games and a couple of first run ones that you would have to pay $60 each with. Now, as long as you play one a month, you to me, you're breaking even. So I think it's a good service. I hope it extends to console at some point.
Subscription services are the new hotness too. I mean, that is what every company is trying to get into. It's not just video. It's not just video games. You know, it's clothing and other stuff too. So it's no surprise that we're going to see a lot of these. I'm curious how many of them can succeed. I'm curious if they will end up generally being from the game companies themselves, like this EA one, although EA, I know, right, has some other game studios involved in EA Origin and Access and Access Premier, right, but it's mostly EA stuff. That's the big stuff in there, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a positive thing. I do worry about the oversubscription. Like, how many things are we going to end up subscribing to where we end up paying more than
we want? And that'll shake out the market. Not all of these things are going to survive.
Yep.
Someone is sending CDs full of malware to U.S. state officials, everybody. The Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center has issued a warning about the scam. The packages have a Chinese postmark with a somewhat rambling letter and a CD with a set of Word documents containing malicious Visual Basic scripts. State archives, state historical societies, and a State Department of Cultural Affairs official have all received letters.
This is interesting. So they're banking on, first of all, state governments in the U.S. Not having upgraded to the hottest, latest laptops, which is probably true. So they'll have CD drives, and then gambling that enough people who get these will be like, well, what's this? Let me stick it in my computer. Because to activate one of these malicious scripts, all you have to do is open the Word doc.
Who has CD drive?
Every person at the State Historical Society.
I have one in my car still.
I do too.
Yeah. I've got one in that machine over there, the Windows machine down there. I don't have one in any of the laptops that I use currently, except for the ThinkPad. I think my old ThinkPad, it's a couple of years old now, has a tray. But yeah, I mean, it's getting rarer, but it's not as rare as you think. Us here on the cutting edge might be like, what?
But okay, so you work for the government in some capacity. You get a CD in the mail. There's a Chinese stamp on it. There's a letter that is, you know, rambling or whatever word you want to use. You know, these are the sorts of things where you're like, I don't know what this is, but I'm not doing anything with it. But there are enough people, and this is, you know, the whole idea of you know, social engineering, that they get fooled. Partly by curiosity, partly by confusion, I think.
Yeah, it's DVD drives, not CD drives. We know that we're using the terms loosely. I know somebody's going to call us on that, but Amos in the chat room says we have new computers at his job at the USAF. They all have DVD drives.
Yeah, even when I go to CES or those type of events where they give you like the little flash drive with the more information, I don't like putting those in my computer.
So no, you shouldn't. Trust it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because those can have viruses that auto-activate too without even the company who gave it to you knowing, absolutely, right? It could have happened somewhere up the chain from them. So, yeah. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, by golly, I invite you to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. It'll save you time and make you smarter. Although, make me smart, entirely different thing from MarketWatch, which is great because it's got Molly Wood and Kai Rizdahl on it. All right. Twitter announced it will work with professors from Leiden University to study how echo chambers form on the platform. you know, where people just start to amplify each other's, like, I think this is true. Yeah, I think it's true. And then it just takes off from there. And something I have been pounding my fist about for a long time, what effect they have. We know echo chambers exist. So they're going to talk about, well, how do they form? So maybe we can stop them from forming, or at least discourage them. And what effect do they have? Maybe they're not worth stopping. We don't. They probably are, but let's find out what effect they have so we can try to figure out how to better deal with things. Among the things they're going to study will include the difference between incivility and intolerance. I found this very interesting. Mm-hmm. Past research, not the research they're about to conduct, but past research has shown that being uncivil can actually serve an important function. Like, just shutting, making everyone say nice things is not good. You actually need incivility to advance discussions. It has its other negative side effects, but it can serve an important function, while intolerance is almost always counterproductive. Twitter also announced it will work with professors from Oxford and Amsterdam to study intergroup conflict, showing that conversations with positive sentiments and cooperative emotions and more complex thinking can reduce prejudice and improve relationships, again with the idea of how do we foster these things to make for a better experience. At the same time, a UK parliamentary committee put out a study about online disinformation, calling for urgent action to build resilience against misinformation and disinformation into our democratic system. The report recommends everything you can come up with off the top of your head to combat disinformation and misinformation is in this report. I'm not kidding you. Tax on social media, public education, both in schools and to the public in general, changes to election law, advertising law. Another report covering the inquiry's wider terms of reference with a closer look at advertising is going to follow. So they're not done with throwing every recommendation against the wall. And here in the United States, Senator Mark Warner actually published a white paper on Axios with proposals for fighting political misinformation, same sort of thing, protecting user privacy and promoting competition. 20 options in Senator Warner's white paper there. A few fewer, actually, than the UK one, but still hefty with options. So I wanted to talk about this because I don't know about you guys. You guys poke holes in my argument here, but I look at this and I think Twitter's doing the right thing in this case. Let's get people who actually study this sort of thing to ask the right questions so that we can then hopefully take what we learn and figure out how to make a better platform. Let's not just assume that, oh, if we shut everyone up from saying not bad things, that'll help. Apparently it won't. Let's actually figure out how this is all working. Let's start to study it closer. And in this case, what's happening is these researchers are continuing their research just with the aid of Twitter. Whereas the UK and the US thing, and particularly the UK one, is just like, we think this is a problem, so let's do this without really knowing whether it's going to help or not.
Yeah. I think this is a tough thing because you have news, right? News that's supposed to give you facts. And then you have commentary, which are people's opinions. I mean, this is a commentary show. So a lot of times commentary is disguised as news, and causes the emotional reactions, and that creates feelings of, well, I want to go into my echo chamber where I get the news I want to get, right? So I think there's nothing wrong with it if you still somehow are exposed to what you need to know. I think this is good for Twitter. I look at something like, I was just debating this yesterday with myself, could talk to myself, using the Google News app versus the Apple News app. And it's just, they're pretty much the same. But what I like about both of them is that, yes, I could personalize the news the way I want, but they also kind of make it where you kind of have to see the top five things that are happening no matter what. So, I think those kind of things, and I'm not saying Google has it right, I'm not saying Apple has it exactly right, but those type of things start to break down, these echo chambers or these fake news, whatever you want to call it. And it's something being done. So I think Twitter jumping in on this is important because they are the source of the immediate news. And it's very important they figure out how to disseminate that right. Or I don't even know controlling the dissemination is even the right word, because there could be problems with that.
Well, I mean, at a certain point, you could just control the dissemination, right? It's trying to figure out, like, how do we have an open platform where people are allowed to just talk to each other that isn't open to obvious abuses?
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the Mark Warner's options that he laid out, which is, it's a fascinating read, and to me, it seemed really well thought out and made a lot of good points, was the idea of giving a user, you know, a Facebook user, a Twitter user, any, you know, social network user, some sort of a measurement of how valuable they are to data collection companies. So it's not about followers, right? Because we all think like, oh, the more followers, the better this this experience is. But for a for-profit company that is harvesting your information, how valuable are you to the companies that this company works with and is their bread and butter? And are you okay with that?
So a clout score for information.
Well,
data,
I guess, you know, I don't exactly know how it would be, you know, generated and then recorded and offered up to the users. But the idea that there are a lot of folks on social media who have kind of bought into this whole idea of, oh, it's just information and, you know, friends and, you know, we're all communicating together. And you've seen those Facebook commercials, you know, they're very, very syrupy, but, and that's fine. Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first companies to do that. Twitter going on record and saying, hey, we need to figure out some stuff about the echo chamber. The echo chamber, you know, in real life, we're all very familiar with the fact that people tend to hang out with other people that share their beliefs and their likes. And that's kind of the way it's always been, for better and worse. But when you have a platform that offers much more information at a much higher speed in real time and is kind of changing the whole landscape, you can't just say, well, you know, that's how people are, because it has changed behaviors of humans all across the world.
I do think we overreact to that, though. I think Brexit and the 2016 presidential election caused enough people on particular sides of both those issues to be upset to start blaming what was truly an effect. I'm not denying that it was effect for the outcome in such a way that they say something must be done now without giving us the time to figure out, well, hold on, how much did it have an effect? What effect did it in fact have? And how do we make sure that that effect is mitigated against any kind of outcome, not just the one that you didn't like? And that's why there this UK report where it's like, well, let's ban micro-targeted political advertisements. Let's put the tech companies on the hook for liability. That's a popular thing to say right now. Like, make them be on the hook. May or may not fix any of the problems. It may just allow other avenues to open up, and it may not actually go after the thing that causes it. There's two things in both of these studies, Senator Warner's and the UK's, that I think are similar, and one of them's dangerous and one of them isn't. Both of them want to modify laws, in the U.S. case, modify the CDA, Section 230, to make tech companies more liable for the speech of people on their platforms. I think that is likely to have unintended consequences that they don't want, but they think it's a short-term fix. The other thing that I think is great that both of them recommend is, let's spend some money on educating public about how this works. I am all for that. Let's also figure out how it works. But there are some things we know that are best practices that we can start to tell people about, like, hey, you, this might be a bot. You know, don't necessarily engage. Don't believe everything you read, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. You said it in your second point. Education will ultimately solve this, but we need to find out what the exact problem is and get people to allow themselves to be educated. And everybody won't buy into it, but I think we're at a point now where in society where, you know, if things are explained to us in a rational way, I think the majority of us will.
The majority will. That's another thing to educate the public about. Everybody thinks, everyone but me is stupid and irrational and nothing will work. Most of us are actually pretty rational and, you know.
We're pretty good people.
We ain't dumb.
Yeah. Most of us, anyway.
Most, exactly.
Well, but I mean, the whole idea of education is like, okay, well, when does that happen and where? Does it happen in school? Is there, you know, a new class that kids need to go to?
Yeah, like,
you know,
is it an element of the classroom? I think public information campaigns would be good. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the UK lists out, you know, some plans for, okay, certain companies are going to have to pay into some, you know, public fund where we're going to further education. That's a good idea. Sounds good in theory to me too, but how is it going to be rolled out? That's the next question. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You submit stories like this and others, and we love you for it. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. If you want to hang out with us on Facebook, facebook.com/group/dailytechnewsshow.
All right. We get the emails and we love them. What do we got today?
Oh, man, we got a good one. Hutch wrote in with some clarification about how law enforcement uses facial recognition versus what the public thinks. And this is kind of piggybacking on our discussion last week about the ACLU running a test that incorrectly identified members of the U.S. Congress as people connected to mugshots, and it was incorrect. So Hutch says, as a law enforcement analyst, I've relied multiple times on facial recognition matches as investigative leads. But keep in mind, they're leads. They're not evidence, they're not proof, and they're never 100%. Facial recognition is just simply facial math. The technology we use can't take into account skin color or tones or gender or even hiccups, like if somebody's wearing glasses versus another picture where that person is not. The subject images don't have to be used to completely be front-facing, but there are also limits to the angles off-center that the technology cannot handle. While the operator can manually adjust points of interest on the nose or ears or forehead, etc., found in the subject image, it won't guarantee a perfect match. As a matter of fact, says Hutch, I've had an image of a white female produce a match to an African-American male because the math was close enough, according to the software. Hutch says, we have an in-house expert. He was trained in the FBI who can do matching of the subject to photos of booking photos. But the computer is not going to testify. A computer can't be used as evidence. Use of facial recognition is really no different than getting an anonymous tip. It can point you in a certain direction. It can help you eliminate some false leads, but it still requires evidence gathering prior to arrest and prosecution.
Thank you, Hutch. Oh.
Yeah.
That was very seriously thorough.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, and the TLDR is, if you're using facial recognition right, it's only one of many things you're using to go after a prosecution. And the fear is like, they're going to have a match to me and it's going to be a false positive, but then they're going to arrest me and throw me in jail. And what Hutch is saying is maybe that can happen, but not if they're doing the job right.
Exactly. And just a note about the story, because again, Hutch was responding to our ACLU test story. Amazon responded to that ACLU test showing its recognition software wrongly identifying those members of Congress. Amazon's general manager for deep learning and artificial intelligence, Matt Wood, said, the ACLU used the default setting, which is 80% confidence level. But Amazon says, hey, if you're law enforcement, you got to bump that up to 99%, or you're going to get a lot of false positives. In fact, the company says it tried to duplicate that test that the ACLU conducted involving the same portraits. But Amazon used a larger data set of faces for comparison and said, when we set the confidence threshold to 99%, and had a bigger pool, our misidentification rate dropped to zero, despite the fact that we're comparing against a larger pool overall.
So it bears out what Hutch says. Use it as a particular tool and use it right.
Yes. Yep. 99%.
We're not, and trust me, I'm not saying they all do, but that's what you should be holding their feet to the fire about.
Absolutely. Well, thanks to Lamar Wilson for being with us this fine Monday. Lamar, what has been going on with you since you were last with us?
Well, the audio people can't see this, but I'm holding a Funko Pop. I just completed Funko Weekend, not sponsored on my channel. I wanted just to get back into collecting these little adorable things. And I normally do gaming stuff, but these are just adorable. Look at it. It's just so cute. So, I did a weekend where I did Marvel in DC. Actually, unboxed and taste tested the Funko cereal that just got released. So if you're into collecting, check that out. I did a series this weekend. Today's the final video on that series. And yeah, that's at youtube.com/Lamar Wilson. Would be appreciated if you check it out.
Absolutely. Thanks to everybody who supports us on Patreon directly and gets all the perks that go along with membership at patreon.com/DTNS. You could be one of them right now if you're not already. And also check out our DTNS store. If you want to show support, spread the word about Daily Tech News Show. You can wear a hat or a hoodie or a shirt. We got some nice looking shirts in there. New DTNS mugs with a green interior available now. Ooh. At dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
Hey, if you've got feedback for us like Hutch or a question or any sort of comment at all, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com is the email address to send it to. We're also live and we'd love to have you join us Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Brian Brushwood. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com. Diamond Club.
hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.